Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslavsky. I'm taking my show on the road for the first time, so I hope I don't hit any speed bumps. Don't worry, I'll stay in the right-hand lane and keep it under 100. This is episode number 11. Welcome to the first field report of the Smart and Simple Matters show. I'm currently at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus, sitting across a table from Jen Koons, who has an amazing story to share with us and some experience that can't be taught. Jen is a friend and former coworker of my mother, and after hearing her tale of becoming an accidental daily money manager, it made my brain say, wow, over and over again. It was telling me this for many reasons, as in, wow, that's a ridiculous number of obstacles she's had to overcome in dealing with her parents' finances, and as in, wow, she's turned a mountain of financial chaos into something closely resembling order and also turned some dysfunction into a workable long-term solution. I'm going to turn it over to Jen in just a moment, but I wanted to give you a little context first. Like most people who are thrust into a caretaker role for one or more family members, Jen didn't have any formal experience dealing with the problems she was presented with. She worked for her parents' small business as an office manager after college and has also worked in marketing and retail, but now makes a living in the College of Continuing Education at the University of Minnesota. Also of note, Jen has a wonderful husband, Ron, and two great boys, ages 11 and 5, and lives with them in St. Paul. But from our perspective today, her work history and immediate family situation isn't what's going to benefit you. She's going to tell us about her mother and stepfather and the financial bomb they hid from everybody in the family until it blew up. Jen was there 2 years ago to try and pick up the pieces, and it's an ongoing saga to this day. To me, Jen is a bit of a hero who assumed the mantle of accidental daily manager and cleaned up an incredible mess. So if you sigh, applaud, or feel stunned, you can be amazed right along with me as she tells her story and the practical advice she has for people in a similar situation or those who want to avoid finding themselves in a similar situation. So welcome, Jen. I'm happy to have you on the show.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
Excellent. All right, let's paint a picture for everyone of your family history and how you were forced to assume financial and organizational responsibility for your mother and stepfather. Now, I'm not going to ruin the story, but don't feel like you need to skip any details like their 20 credit cards, all with unpaid balances, the townhouse they lived in for 30 years and still have a massive mortgage balance on, your mother's spending problems, being years behind on their tax filing and payment, the unorganized stacks of paper everywhere, or anything else that comes to mind. So first, can you tell us how bad of a financial situation your parents were in when you discovered the major problems they had been hiding from everyone?
Well, when it came to me, they were having problems also with their housing, and so they were staying with me, and we were in the house helping them as well with that physical need as well. I took on bookkeeping by finding bills and papers and gathering up information from their house, then realizing that they're getting creditors calling. There's creditors, there is trying to get a handle on the financial pictures, wondering, it started sort of looking at whether we could change their housing. So that's kind of where the trigger was. You look at what they were paying, what they could afford, what their income was, all those pieces and parts. So I sort of started just out of nothing, grabbing together what I could. And of course, with the house in chaos, there was no organization or order to most of their paper and bookkeeping to begin with. So I sort of had to feel my way in the dark to gather information. And then I realized that they had, the first thing was the excessive credit debt. So there was some 20 credit cards with balances on them, store cards, credit cards. I was sort of baffled that people could get that many credit cards, but they had many credit cards. They have a full mortgage. They've been small business owners for many years, so I think that they've refinanced perhaps to get money out of the property. That might be why the mortgage is still, I mean, they're both at an age it should be long past having a mortgage. So they were in arrears, I think at the time, a month or two on the mortgage, and the credit was usually kind of snowballing. So just layers and layers upon layers of debt monthly on fixed income. So I started out with kind of looking at the picture and sort of gathering first. Right off the bat, I sort of found my way through a social worker to pursue, just getting an idea where to pursue assistance. And I had been to a university staff informational thing years ago from Lutheran Social Services and just thought to call them because that's who I had met. I've talked to a person there once before years ago, and that was my first stop to start getting a handle on what to do next was that agency.
So it's fair to say that the financial obstacles that your parents were facing were huge, but not necessarily the only ones. You mentioned the organizational obstacles that they've had to overcome. Can you give us an idea, if we were to have walked into your parents' house 2 years ago before you started to intervene, what did it look like inside? What did it feel like to you?
Well, they were in a situation where the house wasn't livable for the most part. It was a hoarding situation. The house was filled with stuff. Thankfully, nothing too horrific that you hear about in the TV and everything else, but a pretty common situation, evidently, where there was paper, lots and lots and lots of paper, because, of course, when you have excessive credit debt, you're having spending. So there's lots and lots of stuff. There's stuff purchased at stores and garage sales and craft stores, and it's just the house was almost unlivable as far as what would be considered normal. I mean, it was full with pathways and just what you would think of a house that's full of stuff. So they had to move out at the demand of the fire marshal. They had to be out of the house with no notice. Literally, you get no notice. You get a sign on the door saying the house has to be uninhabited. So they lived with me. They moved in with me with about a 3-day notice of into my house, and they moved in with me. So they lived at my house in a room, guest room, and we, my siblings and I, started to determine how we would clear the house to make it livable, and at the same time discovered the financial mess was going along with it. So I took the lead on the financial matters, and my brother worked on the house. I also helped with the house, but I could only do so much at once, so it took about 8 months to get the house livable. We chose to do it ourselves because if you hire somebody, they just clean the house out. And if they just clean the house out, they don't salvage things that might be a personal value to the family or to my parents. And we were sensitive to trying to do that. So we took the job on versus having a hired company come in and do it on their behalf. So we did our best to salvage papers and documents and, you know, materials from the house as we were going through the house. Fire department also, they're very helpful. They do this a lot, and they're good at giving resources. They're the ones that provided senior services in the city, in their town. It's Eden Prairie, actually, that had a very good senior services resource that they hooked you up with a social worker. And they're very familiar with dealing with this type of problem in people. Surprisingly, it's more common than we all think or realize, probably. So it was helpful right off the bat with just the emotional load of having this literally dumped on us to deal with, is to have the social worker's perspective and a little bit of assistance to what to do next. So I guess the house was the first thing. We didn't realize with the house that the money part was there, but it was very soon after that we sort of had the whole thing in place. So I took on power of attorney. There, in the family, there is several kids, several of us between the families, and I'm the lucky, responsible one. So I took on the power of attorney and getting access to be in charge. And I really set it up from square one that I'm going to look at getting your money in order, but you're doing it my way. You need to do it my way if I'm going to do it. I really set that down. And they were very willing, thankfully, to at least at that point start out with okay. And I think it's typical, people are, they probably are fearful and are hiding it for reason. They're protecting of all that going on, the house and the money, all that. People protect that from being public. And so when it's uncovered, I stepped in, and there's a lot of emotion, I'm sure, in that, but I sort of just stood my ground and said I would do it. And so I volunteered to take it on and have them at my house for some months. But
well, you were talking about literally having it dumped on you, and I think you were probably referring to the paperwork.
Yes.
And
boxes of stuff. And trying to find, I mean, we all think of what piles of stuff is, and when you're going through a house of stuff and there's piles of paper that is a mixture of newspapers and mail and magazines, and then a couple books, a box of checks that was lost, and bank statements from 6 years ago and last week, and this, I mean, it's a jumble. It's
just
a complete,
all mixed together.
It's a complete jumble and a crapshoot, if you don't mind the term, of what you're going to actually even find. So you're not going to find all of it and then organize it. You're going to find what you can and then piece it together from there.
So. Well, I wish the fire department didn't have as much experience with the types of things that you're talking about. It's great that they were a big resource for you.
But, yeah, they really are.
Part of me wishes that this is something that they'd look into and say, oh boy, we just don't deal with this. We can't help you. But you did get some help. You mentioned that your brother helped. I know you had the help of your greater community and some faith-based organizations. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about who the cast of characters was that was helping you before we get into some other questions about the details?
Yeah, one of the first people I spoke to was a social worker in Eden Prairie, and she works with seniors specifically, and she was very helpful helping me understand kind of what to do next with the housing situation and the whole, she knew the circumstance with the finances early on too. I mentioned earlier I was familiar with Lutheran Social Services just because I am familiar with that agency, and I called them very early on as well, and I took the initiative on my own to make an appointment with a counselor and literally just go in on my own. I didn't bring my parents to any of those. I felt it was more efficient and would be better for me taking on the job to just be in charge of that myself. So I really did that myself. I didn't include them, and really intentionally. And they were okay with that as of being willing to do that. So I met a Lutheran Social Services. I also have a very, very strong faith community in my church, and friends and people who, and even coworkers who just care and are there for me to gripe to, or you know, cry or whatever it took to be off work, and all this chaos ensued. That I had very supportive work life and faith support of friends in that circle who just are there. I think that is a huge benefit. If I was flying solo and didn't have anybody saying, hey, how's it going, or you know, it would have been a lot more stressful. I also have very strong personal family. My husband's great, and my, you know, I have two little boys. My husband was very understanding. It, you know, we sort of laugh about it now, is that why we did it when there's seven kids and there's all this to deal with, is that early on when they were out of their townhouse temporarily and all this came in at once, my husband's words were, it's a compassionate thing to do to take them in and help. So I'm like, well, yeah, I wish we weren't so darn compassionate. But truthfully, that's carried us in some strange way, that it was right to help them. It was right, as ugly and nasty and unpleasant as it has been, it was right to step in and do whatever could be done. And something was better than nothing. So, but yeah, those agencies, I think that really the main ones were the social worker in the city and the Lutheran Social Services, as far as true expertise out there, and then sort of asking around and then making it up.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying not to let that crazy context get in the way of realizing that I said your husband's name wrong. It's Rob, not Rob.
Oh, it's Rob, yes.
So sorry, Rob, if you're listening.
No,
I apologize.
Okay.
So I want to get into what people can do to either avoid the situation that you're describing here, or if they find themselves in it, take steps to get out of it? Because I know, and we'll talk about in just a little bit, some of the steps that you are trying to go through to remove yourself over 2 years later from this ongoing saga. And I know you previously told me that the underlying battle with your parents and that caused most of this mess, and I know that you're still fighting with them about it to this day, is defining needs versus wants and who gets to define them, you or them. And I know you mentioned that they have a huge sense of entitlement that's almost impossible to resolve and assign blame to everyone except for themselves for the situation that they're in. So what strategies would you offer up somebody dealing with a family member or friend who couldn't tell the difference between a need or a want?
First of all, in hindsight, I guess, which is, you know, the usual, if early on being maybe aware of someone's situation or being aware earlier on, if you're seeing any signs of problems of, you know, overspending and maybe starting ahead of time would have been helpful. If it would have helped, I don't know. The needs versus wants, you know, has become sort of my mantra of trying to explain that. It is challenging, to be honest, to get someone in this position to convert themselves to new thinking. It's very challenging. They might say they get it, but my needs versus wants were, I try to be very simple and very straightforward. You know, the needs are, I would sort of repeat myself that you need to have housing, healthcare, medication, food, you know, those, you need to have things. I will never short you. I guess it's the feeling that I was shorting them financially. I will never short you on those needs. I will never not pay those things. I will defer the wants, you know, credit debt, shopping money. There are things that are wanted, and really at a very elementary level, it was almost like I had to define it at a very elementary level. What do you need to live? What do you want to have? Or what's excessive? What has caused the problem? What's caused the problem? The credit debt, thousands and thousands of dollars in credit debt, was probably mostly wants. You know, you have enough money. You know, I also would kind of repeat, you have enough money to meet your needs. You have enough income to live comfortably and meet your needs. And I literally had to lay it on the paper, teach myself and them, this is your income, and this is how much your mortgage and your health insurance are. These are the things you have to have. And I really had to break it down to a really simple part. And same with Lutheran Social Services, provides a lot of, you know, they have worksheets that you meet with a counselor to kind of help you. They have some standards set, and it was helpful to me as the playing the parent role in quotes here to my parents, to have another person to say, well, according to Lutheran Social Services, the expert in here, sometimes that was helpful to use that, is that they say that this is the amount of money per person in a household for food. You know, they could kind of give me some parameters of things to, I didn't just make them up out of the air, and it helped me to have sometimes an expert opinion on what food and things should be, to sort of, I had to really coax that budget idea into their thinking, because they've never had that. So that was a big, early on I sort of had to pick away at just the really basic thinking on that.
So it sounds like if you would have been a neutral third party and you would have been able to cite academic research or scientific studies, they probably would have thought you were more credible than their own daughter, who is trying to take time out of her own life to help them and shake their sense of entitlement.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, because I got the feeling a lot that arguments are about me being mean. I mean, it seems like I'm being mean if I think you should have less cable, well, then I'm going, if someone was more of an expert or more official, something as simple and silly to me as that was a battle point. And so I think you're right. Something, if I had more of a credential or someone outside, they probably would go, yeah, okay, and we'd agree to something from an expert versus me kind of forcing my way and my opinion on it. So it was hard to do that.
Wow. Sometimes that's what I can muster. Now, I want to just transition briefly. I know that when you uncovered the severity of your mother and stepfather, that you wish you would have taken some actions right away. You had mentioned to me engaging the fire department earlier or using some of the resources that they made available to you. If somebody, at the moment that they uncover the severity of the situation, do you have some insight or do you have maybe a first couple of steps that you recommend that somebody takes if they were to discover a situation like what you're describing?
I mean, the financial
or organizational, the whole picture. Pick one if you like.
I think it would be very beneficial, you know, given that they had the kind of the housing and the financial were intertwined, it could have been beneficial or would be beneficial to somebody to sit down and sort of have a maybe a meeting of minds right off the bat. You know, sit down with, and I'm talking mostly family, maybe like an intervention type situation with more of a group might have been more helpful because I was sort of on my own. I think bringing together my parents and us kids, maybe if we had sort of had an opportunity to kind of sit down with them and say, all of us, you know, we're going to do this. And having more of an established kind of a front would have helped me a lot because I was sort of on my own. I didn't have a lot of support for a number of reasons, but we didn't band together as maybe as well as we could have. There's probably reasons for that. But I think and at that type of meeting, including an expert, so to speak, including a social worker, and bringing, I think, a group together to sort of confront, and that's sort of a negative word, but to kind of have this intervention, saying we're doing this, we're going to help you, and making it maybe off the bat that way would have been less, maybe some defense wouldn't have been thrown up as much. It might have helped. It might have cracked the wall a little earlier or more thoroughly than it did. But it's one of the, you know, you kind of on the fly just put out fire, you know, really put out fires trying to figure out all this mess. It might not have speeded things up, but it might have given at least more people would have known the whole picture. It might have been helpful to have more people know in more detail and lay it at my parents more clearly that we all know the situation. We have all the facts in front of us here, and we're going to lay it on them in a way that's intentional the goal is to help them resolve the problem. I don't know that every situation will vary, but I think that would have helped a little bit because I've sort of had trouble. I think the battle has been them versus me.
You had mentioned detail and level of detail, and you had told me a detail in a previous conversation that we had, and I actually wrote it down because I wanted to make sure that I remembered to talk about it. And you were telling me about tax work and credit card collection companies banging down your door. And there was one story you told me about a debt collector calling you on Sunday morning at 6 a.m.
Yep.
And then again at 8 a.m. And then again at 10 a.m.
Yes.
And the fact that most of the mail that your parents would normally get now comes to you. Not just their financial stuff, but just their general mail that you need to sort through all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough enough. People who are competent and compassionate, like you're talking about, it's tough enough for them to deal with that. And taking responsibility for somebody who is, you're describing your stepfather and your mother, I can't imagine, and I don't possess it, the level of understanding that you need in order to be up to that kind of serious challenge. So when other family members are unprepared,
mm-hmm.
or are unwilling to lend a hand, who do they call or where do they go to? I know this is probably a continuation of some of the topics that you were talking about, but that unified front, when you're trying to present one with the credible experts, the social worker, a daily money manager, somebody from the fire department, and then your whole family, when you can't make that happen, what do you do instead?
Well, probably what I did was I really held my ground. I had to, I had to stay very consistent in my message, and it's been hard to not waver. But I think that's been part of it. I've been absolutely consistent. You know, kind of determine what I had to do is simplify and make it very clear as to even to manage it on top of my own life, this I had to have it very simplified. I had to have all the bills automatically paid. I had to have an outside agency do the debt collection. I did debt collection through Lutheran Social Services. They bundle the credit card debt into one payment, and you pay the agency. And I said, that's the only way I'll do this. I will not pay 20 credit card bills, for instance. Creditors are very responsive to having you deal with a very legitimate nonprofit like Lutheran Social Services. So I felt out there that way. I worked with the agency to kind of dump the 20 credit cards into one payment. I automated payment. I went to Wells Fargo numerous times and sat down with a banker to have an account for this. I made it work for me. I made it as tidy and organized and simple as I could so that I could do it, and it was easy to communicate to them. It's also more clear when I had a control of it to communicate with siblings that, hey, I'm doing this and this and this. And so if anything, the support I would get, which maybe wasn't doing anything, which it was still helpful to have my sister say, Jen's doing the right thing. Even that is helpful to kind of have it laid out very as tidy and neat as possible. Make it work for, it had to work for me. I didn't really care if how I was doing the work to fix the problem worked for them. It had to work for me doing it.
Right.
And so, it was an intent to make it simple and make it workable, because it was not working like it was. So, and educating back, in best I could, what I'm doing. I always kept them up on what I'm doing. I didn't want to be in a predicament where someone was questioning what I was doing. So I guess being detailed about that, having a lot of documentation. You have to there's a lot of phone calls. I learned a lot by calling some creditors and calling some agent, the banks, even those people who are trying to get money. Some people you can call and arrange and work with, and you can work things out. Some of them you can't. For the most part, you can if you're taking the time to sort of be very tidy and organized. So a lot of it was just getting a big control of the mess and having a handle on it.
Yeah, that constant communication and the delegation of responsibilities sounds like it's huge. And it's good to know that there are some folks who are reasonable, at least from a creditor perspective. I wasn't trying to badmouth them earlier. I know that there's some horror stories that are out there, and you probably have some of your own. But it's great to know that a place like Lutheran Social Services, and actually I noted this because I thought it might be relevant to people, Lutheran Social Services, they negotiated with some of the creditors to lower interest rates from 29% down to 0% in one case.
Back up to that giant credit card debt. All those credit cards were, most of them were like 29.99% interest. So it's outrageous. You're never paying them off. And they literally do. They negotiate. They bundle all the debt into one monthly payment with a small fee for their services. They negotiate zero or minimal credit interest rate, sometimes 6%, 5%, 0%. And then you pay them the lump sum on time. There's no paying them late. You pay them on time. They pay the creditors off a little bit each month, and they pay them in that cycle where you pay one. They kind of pay them all down in a cycle. And they also, in fact, I found out calling a store credit card, it was surprising that like JCPenney's or something, that said, oh, if you're working with Lutheran Social Services, then yes, we'd be happy to talk to them, have them call us, we'll work with them. So some of those corporates financially support an agency. That's how much they are willing to work with it. Some of those corporate companies and credit cards industries even financially support Lutheran Social Services as a corporate donation because of the service they provide back to consumers. So they are by far the most reputable, or one of the couple of reputable agencies that do that. Not the 800 number at midnight saying, get out of debt, call this number. They really do what they say they do, and the creditors were very responsive to work with. So that was a huge lifesaver to me, was to have that credit card debt lumped away. Dealing with Bank of America on a mortgage, or that I had to do separately. Mm-hmm. But it's those credit card companies that are the ruthless Sunday morning call. So they're out there. I learned a lot about credit card companies.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you know way more than I do. Way more than you want to know. Well, I want to just transition for a brief moment. I was hoping we'd have time to talk about this one, and it seems like we will. Putting on your detective hat, it sounded like you got the sense pretty quickly that you would need to do that. You would need to get a sense of your parents' routines and patterns and maybe even outright tricks after months and years of detective work. So what advice would you give someone to be able to put on their own detective hat so that they can root out some of the underlying symptoms, some of the core issues, and understand before things blow up how bad it might be or how it might become?
I would recommend, I know early on in I've sort of been the trustee or the go-to about things in the family, or I wish I had had the chance to ask perhaps at some other point with parents, especially with parents. It would be helpful, is me speaking to them, it would be helpful to sort of have a picture of what's what with, so that I'm prepared, sort of in a less stressful time to ask them for, access, permission to sort of, how's it going? How's your financial picture going? It might be helpful if you wouldn't mind some time. I think it's important to let people not feel threatened. I think it would have been helpful if I had had the opportunity to ask and gently say, it would be helpful to have an understanding of where you guys are financially so that in case there's a situation or if you're in a situation, I can help now. I can help you or we can look at what's going on. I think I would think people are sometimes relieved, and I got this from the social worker. Sometimes there is some sense of relief that someone found out because they don't know what to do and they'll never know what to do on their own. So getting the parties or the family member to sort of reveal it to you, if there's any way or opportunity to do that sooner, would have been huge. Having a handle and going about it with a non-threatening approach initially, I think, all right, this is a problem. After the fact, access to everything. Access to, I look at online bank statements. I was doing it almost daily or routinely to see the spending and being able to say, I see this, just to kind of call them on it at that point to say, here's what you're at. Showing them, this is what you're spending in a month on eating out, this is what you're spending in a month, so that they can see real numbers, kind of reversing it back and educating them. You have better luck going at it with, my intent is to help you. I'm not trying, it's ugly and nasty, and they're going to battle tooth and nail, and they have, but to get to this point, unknowing it feels kind of bad that they get to that point that you didn't know. It's that any way people could find out that there's risk or situation before the fall. But if you get to the fall, it's just you have to have access to all and be very honest. And I've been extremely honest with them, if anything, very, very matter of fact and very on fact. No opinion, it's not so much even judgment of what they've done. What you did is what you did. Now we're here, and we have to go here. And so I've been, if anything, me, that's my sanity, is being very matter of fact and having as much information as possible and being really willing to monitor and track and kind of dig in there and see what kind of papers. If you find things hidden, people will hide bank statements and hide stuff. And sort of rummaging out and laying it out with them and saying, what's this? And having them contribute. So
that emotional strain that you just mentioned, I know that you talked earlier to me, but before we even got together, about how it's okay to feel like you're losing your mind from time to time. And that one stuck with me a little bit because I think we all feel that. Well, we all feel like we're losing our mind from time to time, but whether we give ourselves the kind of self-compassion or the pat on the back and say, it's okay. if we feel a little bit crazy, a little bit nutty from time to time, these are legitimate feelings, and hopefully with the help of a supportive family and faith community and local community and coworkers, we can get through it. But I know that that emotional strain is just absolutely huge. The other thing that I wanted to mention is you had talked about your parents, they were on a fixed income, and the fact that they were burning through some of the things that were intended to see them through retirement, some investments, some annuities, and you even joked that you would love to put all of their money into a jar, all of their retirement, literally put all of their money into a jar, and then have them either give, have somebody give it to them or have them take it out themselves so that they could physically see the diminishing amount of money that they have on a very fixed budget. Have you thought of anything else in the meantime other than the retirement money in the jar approach?
No, that still comes up. I've, you know, I'm at a point now where I may, my problem is I repeat to them is that, you know, your investments are not an ATM that you can just call up and just withdraw lump sums that weren't intended for that. Again, the education, communicating is that this is 2 years ago, this is what, these are the income checks you got in the mail. This is Social Security and then income. Now we're down to two less incomes per month because we've sort of had to tap, and that it's real. I mean, it's real that way. The jar is still appealing because it would be much easier, but I haven't come up with any more clever tricks except for keeping, trying, wherever I can, trying to simplify. Like, I'm in the process now of looking to perhaps, you know, I don't want to say throw in the towel, but kind of hand over the day-to-day to see if they really want to do it and are battling that we can do this on our own, maybe I'm better, you know, maybe I can better suit them, be more of help to help them with some of the tax work. I'll do that and then give them the day-to-day. It's meticulously neat. It's, this is the, when the income comes in, and most of their payments now are automatic. So if you don't spend more than you need to, the bills can come out automatically, so there's not a lot of work involved, so trying to simplify for them. But I'm still at a somewhat of a loss how to hold, I always have in my head the vision of a dike of water, you know, spurting through little cracks in the, and I'm always got it, like, all my fingers and toes have plugged everything. There is no more plugging I can do. So I have been sort of the, even though the jar idea is good, I've been sort of really the protector of those balances and really stood my ground, and I wait as long as I can on not, we're not withdrawing money. Because I'm fearful of that. I mean, I want them to hold their income as long as they can, but now I know how to do it if I have to do it. There's, unfortunately, sometimes a little bit of fear is not bad. Letting them know that if you look at real numbers on paper and this is your income, and that this will be your income if you keep on this path. It's fact. There's not, I'm not hiding anything. I'm not making anything up. I've gotten to a point now where I'm very blunt with the negative, that this is reality and it's not made up. It's a little bit of fear, and they'll sort of backpedal on creative ways of making more money. But I think I try to reel them into reality. You can talk about, we could get a part-time job, we could sell this, we could, but you can't plan money. You can't plan. I always say, this is the money you know you have every month. You know you have this every month. So if you can figure out how to live with what you know you have, are, do you want to choose to reduce what you know by choice or not? And so I think it's, you know, I haven't come up with anything better than the jar. But I think now I'm playing kind of a little more hardball with.
It sounds like you need to.
Not giving in. So.
It's too bad. I was going to say that it would, humans best deal with change by being motivated by negative emotions. I don't think that's true. I don't think we best deal or spark change via negative emotions. It's probably the easiest way. To get somebody to be motivated or to change course is to bring up fear or worry or stress. I wish that we were wired in a little different way sometimes to respond better to the positive incentives as opposed to some of the negative kick in the pants that either you're giving yourself or that somebody else is giving you. Well, I really hope that you can remove yourself as much as possible. I know you're into year three of a four-year debt management program.
Right.
And I know how much you've been doing over these past two-plus years, and I would like to applaud you for your efforts and for the compassion, and beyond the compassion, for the hours, the days, all the work that you've done for your parents. That's really great. And the only thing that I want before we wrap it up is to give you an opportunity and just ask you, is there anything else that you'd like people to know?
No, I think I'm going to go back a bit to your crazy, about feeling like you're crazy and you're losing your mind thing. Is that through it all, the self-care or the, you know, letting yourself take a break more often. I think taking a break and knowing that you are doing something, even if you do a little something, you're doing something. It's a huge step to do something. And I sort of have to sort of remind myself, and sometimes it's my husband or someone else that reminds me as well, wow, I can't believe. And it feels like you're just losing it and you're buried. But it's not your money and not your thing. You can take a vacation from it, and you can take a break from it, and it is a contribution in the long run. It's going to benefit them even if you do something small. So I try to remind myself of that more as best as I can, that it's something, and I've the benefit is I've learned a huge amount about doing money management for my own self, and I'm hoping that's beneficial in my situation as well in the long run, which I expect it will be. But, and I won't be volunteering. I've been asked to, oh, you should do this as a job for people. No.
Being an accidental daily money manager is enough, right? You don't have to be a legitimate professional one.
I haven't decided if it'd be easier for strangers or family. I haven't decided yet. So I would be happy to give, I'm happy to help anyone else have, you know, see how to get through it all and troubleshoot problems. But no easy task, but again, it's something that we end up doing, and I'm still glad I've done what I've done. So,
well, on behalf of Jen, I want to hammer home that if you ever find yourself in a situation like hers, don't let this quote project or all the stressful work take over your own life and family. It's very likely that you won't fix the person you're trying to help, and they don't want to be fixed by you or anyone else. Understanding this ahead of time will limit everyone's frustration while still allowing you to help out where and when you can. And please, please identify and use the free resources available to you, like the social service agencies, community resources for seniors, and others. Finally, I want to make you aware of some additional daily money management resources you can take advantage of through Value of Simple. I created a daily money management hand guide in September 2011 that has everything you need to know about the topic and profession in one place. I'm constantly updating it based on resources that I come across or that people make me aware of, and it's the best content that I can find related to the topic. I really recommend that people check it out if they're having some of the struggles that either Jen is talking about, her family having, or them themselves. I'll provide a link to it in the show notes along with some of the other resources that Jen has been discussing. And also, episode 2 of the Smart and Simple Matters show featured an interview with my friend and professional daily money manager, Carol Evenchick. I've been told by a number of people that listening to it helped them a ton, so please consider using the wisdom there as well. Jen's given us the perspective of an accidental daily money manager, which is invaluable, and combined with the guidance of a professional one, this could make a huge difference in your day-to-day finances and those of your friends and family as well. Jen, I just want to say thank you again for coming on the show today. It takes a lot of courage to describe the situation that you've gone into and the level of detail and with the eloquence that you've had, so I appreciate it.
I appreciate doing it. It's a good opportunity.
So, everyone, it's time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zaslavsky, creator of all things Value of Simple.